Well, it's great to be back with you, even if it is cold outside, as was mentioned earlier. In the class, we talked about what Christian leadership looked like, and now want to take a look at Joseph, who God put in a position of leadership. And we saw that very early in his story. He had a dream in which not only eventually his brothers, but his parents bowed down before him. And we see that God has set him up for leadership. But I want you to see in his leadership the humility of someone who loved and followed God. Last time, Joseph was in prison. He was loyal, and his integrity showed through. So he'd been set up as head over the other prisoners. But we saw that rather than lord it over them, he acted with kindness. He was close enough and perceptive enough to recognize when the cupbearer and the baker were troubled. They were disturbed because they had dreams which no one was able to interpret. But Joseph let them know that God alone held the meaning of dreams, and he would reveal these hidden meanings. And after Joseph had provided God's messages from the dreams, we remember that he asked for one thing, one small request for a man who had been kidnapped and sold as a slave by his own brothers. Then after starting to rebuild a promising new life, albeit as a slave, but a trusted and empowered one, he became the victim of a jilted and vindictive matron. Sent to prison, it was a small but somewhat desperate request that he made. Remember me. When things have been set right for you, cupbearer, remember me. Show me the hesed love that I need. But of course, we know that he wasn't remembered. The cupbearer, he got reestablished in his honored position. He went back to his place in front of Pharaoh and put that jail and Joseph as far out of his mind as he could. And so Joseph, hopes raised, is now once again waiting on God's right time to be helped. I wouldn't say his hopes were dashed. Rather, they slowly, day by day, withered as the weeks and months go by till two full years have left him somewhat resigned to his fate to spend the rest of his days in charge of nothing more than a jail. But then something happens in chapter 41. Our author shifts the scene, and we are in the palace, the realm of power over all of Egypt. The scene is a reflection of what happened in the jail. There is a dream, but no one can interpret it. Beginning in verse 1 of chapter 41 of Genesis, we read, "When two full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile, when out of the river there came up seven cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, seven other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the seven sleek, fat cows. And then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. Seven heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him." Just as the two in the jail were troubled because no one could interpret. This time, Pharaoh was in turmoil. Those two had no one to interpret because they were in jail. But Pharaoh had all the wise men and magicians. We would think of these as priests of the gods. He had them all at his disposal. And yet no one could discern a meaning. At that point, the cupbearer suddenly remembers and he steps up. The NIV says the cupbearer announces to all that he remembers his shortcomings. I'm not sure if it's the NIV that has the shortcomings, because he goes on to recount his story of an offense or a sin against Pharaoh. To me, that's more than shortcomings. One that was grievous enough that he was on death row. You might recall that the word is often translated as sin and was used by Joseph in warding off the unwelcome advances of Potiphar's wife. Joseph, how could I sin against God? This is the same word. So I think it's more powerful than the NIV phrases it. Pharaoh listens to this story with itching ears. All the wise men that he had could not give him the answers he sought. But the cupbearer speaks of sins, plural. He was telling the story about Pharaoh that everyone else probably knew. But in the back of his mind, he was thinking about another offense. The cupbearer had two times done something that was an offense against another. The first time against Pharaoh, landing him on death row, only fortuitously to be rescued. But he's thinking about the unanswered request of a Hebrew slave in jail. His broken faith to a man who, without his help, he would still be there. The help of Joseph and his God had given the cupbearer hope in a dark place, and he still sits in jail. He tells a story. Pharaoh was angry and imprisoned both myself and the chief baker. Just like you, great Pharaoh, we dreamed one night a pair of dreams, but no one was there to interpret. This young Hebrew slave told us what they meant, and it happened exactly as he said. I am here, but the baker, just him, literally in the Hebrew, Pharaoh hanged or impaled, as you may remember. Either way, a grisly end. The story quickens now. Pharaoh is not supposed to be in want of information. Pharaoh learns of uprising and sends his troops to quell them. He decides who lives and dies. Without answers to his dreams, he is powerless. Can you see where this is going? There is a power greater than Pharaoh's. God himself has inserted himself into the affairs of Egypt with a grand plan. He will rescue his people, the family of one man, from a plight that does not even exist yet. And he will invoke all of Egypt's resources in making it happen. Joseph is quickly summoned from the pit. Clean him up. Two things. He shaves. Imagine what kind of shape he is in living in that dungeon. Egyptians were a clean-shaven culture. He needed to be presentable to the greatest Egyptian of all. In fact, it's probable he also shaved his head. That was the Egyptian way, and only the finest served Pharaoh. And our old tells come back again. He is raised from a pit, and he is given new clothes. Moses never mentions if he had a bath. I wonder who got that job. But now he is acceptable in Egyptian culture, and he holds audience before Pharaoh. And in yet another example of God's role reversal, it is Pharaoh who does the asking. just like the two in the jail, he needs an interpretation. Pharaoh asks, I've heard that you can unlock the mysteries of dreams. Joseph is clear. I cannot do that. Literally, in the Hebrew, it is outside of me. It is not me, but God who will answer. He will give you the answer you desire. And Joseph is not saying here that the answer will be to Pharaoh's liking. He's saying it will satisfy Pharaoh's need for an answer. The turmoil he feels God will quell. But we remember the baker. Answers are not always to human liking. At this point, Joseph has no more answer to the true meaning of the dream than us as readers. Beginning in Genesis chapter 41, verse 17, we read already, Pharaoh said to Joseph, in my dream I was standing on the bank of the Nile. And we know the story. The ugly cows eat the healthy cows. And Pharaoh says, they looked just as ugly before. Then I woke up. And of course, there's a second dream. Have you ever had one of those restless nights when your mind won't settle and you wake from a fitful dream? There's thoughts and snatches of dreams still coursing through your head. That was Pharaoh's night. First one dream, woken up, then another. But he saw another strange scene. Seven heads of grain on a single stalk. Healthy and robust. But then seven more heads spring up. These ones are withered and thin. They're dried up by the east wind off the Sinai desert. And like the cows, the sickly swallow up the healthy. The Nile is prominent in these dreams. In Egypt, the Nile is the source of life. In the midst of unrelenting wasteland, which cannot support life, the Nile is the giver of life, bringing water. Its yearly floods enrich the soil by bringing new silt. Of course, that's different today. Today, with all the dams that they have, they don't have that advantage, and global warming is starting to really hurt them because they don't have this yearly flooding. The Egypt was a thin ribbon nation along this gift of, and I'm sorry, but I have to keep saying it, repeating it, life. There really is no other word. There is only life and not life. And their agricultural situation was based on this seasonal flooding. We read about these grasses, reedy grasses. They grew up there, and that was what the healthy cows fed on. But the ugly, gaunt cows, in a somewhat sickening picture, don't eat the grass, but swallow the healthy cows. And Pharaoh says they're just as thin and ugly when they're done. The bad has completely taken away the good. The grain is the same. Grain raised on watered soil is consumed by withered grain parched by the wind. And all is subsumed into the bad. So Joseph reveals to Pharaoh what God has revealed to him. These dreams are really the same. This is for emphasis. God has shown you what he's about to do. This is not just a meteorological event. God has something he wants to fulfill for his people, and Pharaoh, you're being allowed to be a part of it. There is no doubt it will happen. The cupbearer has already reminded us of this. 7 years of bumper crops, 7 years of plenty, but then things will turn and there will be 7 years of famine. It will be so severe that the abundance of the past will be forgotten, just as the grain and the cows. There will be young children playing in the streets who will have known nothing in their young lives but want. And God has sent the message twice to establish that he has set this course and it's coming about soon. God has given Pharaoh a gift, the gift of foreknowledge, but he's also given another gift, this young man, this lowly foreigner, a slave and a prisoner, has been sent to help. In a demonstration of leadership, Joseph now offers advice. He wasn't asked for it. After all, he's a slave newly taken from the pit. But now he commands the attention of everyone present. Find a man. Here are his credentials. He must be discerning and wise. Pharaoh will entrust him with the well-being of the entire land. Put a structure in place so that local officials will oversee a collection during the good years. Put away a fifth each year of the grain. Under your authority, Pharaoh, and I might add investment, this will be saved against the famine years. Maybe you've seen them too. I've seen calculations where one-fifth of a bumper crop saved over 7 years has been shown to be sufficient. If you have a math bent, you can Google it, work it out for yourself. What we are told by Moses is that it was more than sufficient. Verse 49, Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Of course, with God behind it, this plan was destined for success. Egypt will experience the famine, but will overcome it with God's help. Pharaoh and Egypt, though undeserving, will reap the benefit of God acting for his people. But then if you think about it, the Hebrews were no more deserving. Or if you take it one step further, no more than we are deserving of God's grace. Something we should never forget and never take for granted. Amen. When Joseph finishes, there's only one question in everyone's mind. What man can do this? The magicians and the priests, they haven't made the cut. The cupbearer hasn't made the cut. Only one man can do this. On Pharaoh's lips, we hear that only one with the spirit of God. It can actually be translated gods with a small g. But we know that it is the spirit of the one true God. Pharaoh acknowledges what we have known all along. With God providing the wisdom, there is no one as wise and capable as Joseph. In a remarkable display of faith, Pharaoh puts the future of the nation into this young man's hands, a man that mere hours ago was in chains. The palace that it says he is put in charge of, that's a euphemism for the power to rule. The people are going to submit to Joseph. Only the throne itself is the higher authority Pharaoh will reserve for himself. And now another change of clothes. The signet ring, the symbol of Pharaoh's authority. Fine linen of the ruling class. A wife of power. The fealty of the people. Joseph is given everything to demonstrate Pharaoh's faith and reliance on him. He's tasked with carrying out the duties he's talked about. He travels throughout the country, bringing Pharaoh's goodwill to the people. But of course, these are the good years. Of course everybody's happy. They're prosperous. But Joseph wisely stores the grain in many locations close to where it was raised, and they run out of places to put it. An investment for the future. At verse 53, we hear of what we knew was coming. the good years end. The bad years begin. Other lands who did not have God's gift, the dream insight, nor the man Joseph, are in want. They too suffer drought, but they have no food stored up. And now Joseph's leadership is fully revealed. He opens the storehouses so that the people have food. There is so much that Moses tells us all the world came to buy grain. Have you heard that saying? And believe me, I do not know who first did this because it's been attributed to so many people going back to Martin Luther, that a Christian is one beggar showing another where to find bread. I see that in this situation. Joseph is something we call a type. His life experiences parallel and look forward to someone else, to Jesus. Joseph had to suffer, but now he has been raised to the highest position in the land next to Pharaoh. Jesus had to suffer. He lived on earth having left the grandeur of heaven. The Hebrew writer says in chapter 5, verses 7 through 9, during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverent submission. He was heard, yet he still needed to go to the cross. Verse 8, son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. He was God's unique son, yet he had to experience what it was like for humans to resist temptation. Verse 9, and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. This is the great message of our leader. We're like the people of Egypt. We prosper and conquer death because of a humble servant leader.